Hey everyone, welcome back to But Why, the podcast, where every week we talk about the things people say matter and ask the question, but why though? Check out new episodes from us every Wednesday, and if you'd want to support us a little more, head over to patreon.com/butwhythoughPC for all our exclusive and bonus stuff.
Another episode of But Why the Podcast, and today with the 50th anniversary of Apollo 11, we are covering Project Apollo. As always, I am Kate. I'm here with Adrian.
Hey, how's it going?
And Matt.
Hello.
And because there's somebody on this podcast who is a legit scientist and has degrees and stuff in it, he's gonna lead the episode. So do it, Matt.
Yeah, but I don't have a degree in space science, natural sciences.
So what is the actual term for space science, Matt?
Space science. Astronomy.
Astrophysics.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's there too. There's a lot of
I can't do space science.
Know a lot about space, but yeah. So I guess, as always, we'll start off with a question, as we always do. And I guess I have, like, one or two. Do you have any, like, space stories of, like, anything interacting with space that stands out to you? And do you believe in space exploration?
Do I have, like, have I been to space?
No, well, I mean,
I guess you've been to space. You were in the International Space Station, Adrian. Tell me.
Tell me about the time that I beat the Russians to space. I mean, I don't really have any space stories. I love space. I love sci-fi stuff. I think the only, like, pop culture y one that I can think of off the top of my head is that there is a pretty big planetarium in El Paso, and the cast of The Next Generation went there, and I sat in the same seat that Worf sat in. And that's culturally significant in my mind. And if I do I believe in space exploration? What am I? Some I can't think of, like, the word that we can say on the podcast of people who don't believe in space exploration. But yeah, of course I do, man.
People who believe we live in a dome and the planets are fake.
Yeah, yeah. No, this is... We need this. Fund NASA. Or let Elon Musk shoot more stuff into space. I don't know. Anything space-related. We need more space.
It's not like our planet's dying or anything.
Yeah.
I guess my best space story is that I helped my grandpa mow lawns one year to get enough money to buy a telescope. Except we lived in, like, urban San Antonio where you can't see the stars. But I was, like, 8, and my dad helped me set it up, and we attempted to look at the stars with my, like, Target telescope. But I had really fond memories of it because I used to watch all the like National Geographic and History Channel stuff before they became other things, specifically History Channel. And so, like, my dad was always, it was my love of, like, archaeology, but also my love of space. Like, my dad showed me Carl Sagan's universe when I was pretty young. And so he always hit that. And then, kind of like Adrian, like, I can't be a lover of sci-fi and not love space exploration, but I also think, too, that space exploration is a necessity at this point, given our current trajectory on this planet. And, yeah, I mean, I believe in space exploration. Like, that's... I guess it seems like a silly question, because it's like, do you believe in space? But I know that it's a really hot topic, and NASA is at the lowest money it's ever received before. So, I mean, I know it's relevant. But I believe it, and I think we need to be looking up, and if we're not looking up, we've lost any sense of exploration that we have.
So one, So one, I guess I could give more a little better context for space stories, but like Kate, you and I have gone to obviously the space center.
Yeah.
In,
so are you talking about like actual like looking at space stuff?
Well, no, I mean yours was great too. I mean that was great interest in space. I was just saying in general.
Oh yeah, I got a lot of stories for like the space center at Houston, but I just remember that's like my very first like space story. But I also know we were like in. At the Houston Space Center way longer than it probably needed to actually go around the entire thing, because I just kept circling back and looking at things, and they have like the Star Trek uniform that they sent up to space in there, and it's super cool.
Yeah, I feel that. When I went to DC, I spent the most time in the aerospace museum just because it had so much stuff in it. I just wanted to touch all of the moon rocks. And touch all of the things, because I never know if I'd be able to touch stuff from space again.
And I bought a really cool Star Wars shirt that said, may the E equals MC, or the, not MC squared, but like the, whatever the damn calculation is for force. Is it mass times velocity?
Acceleration.
Matt is so upset. I could just see it on his face.
Yeah, I know. It hurts him. I don't care. I knew what it was when it was there, but I woke up from a nap to record this episode, Matt. So, but no, like I also made my feet hurt when we went there because I have a pair of Galaxy Keds that don't fit me very well, and they're kind of painful after a little bit, but I wasn't going to go to the Space Center and not wear my space Keds, because that would have been a missed opportunity that I would have regretted.
Okay. Do it for
Matt's the... just the scientist heart of Matt is just hurting right now.
Not really, because no, these are great stories and why I asked this question specifically. As far as, I guess, for me, like, and basically, I looked it up because I knew it happened in 1995. Dyess is really one of those places that it's a big base where I used to live at, where they actually travel a lot of this. They house a lot of the space shuttles as they get shipped off to like either Houston or to Florida. And so we actually watched. We went out of class and watched the Endeavor actually take off on the airplane to take off, and it was like a space shuttle
That's
race.
That's really cool.
Also, I've been to both the Florida, the Johnson Space Station in Houston, and the Kennedy one in Florida. And then I also watched the space launch for the ISS, the one of the last ones they did in November of 2008. But as far as, like, obviously gone out to the mountains, I worked in the desert, if anybody knows, and so we obviously took a telescope out there. So easy, and if you've ever been out there, there's obviously you can see all the stars. We had a fancy telescope, been able to look at, like, you know, Saturn with all the rings, Jupiter, you know, Mars, and, like, actual decent detail. As far as, like, the space operation, yes, but a reason I asked this question because people always say yes or they say stuff, but they don't actually, because there's a difference between going to space and then space exploration, like, because basically we put people on the moon and we've done nothing since then. We just sit in low orbit, like satellites. And so that's, like, this thing. So
yeah, no, I mean shoot some people off as far as you can get them and see what they can do.
No, but I mean, you'll be surprised how many people actually do not believe in space exploration. It's why NASA's become.
We got problems here. Why do we need to worry about space? I mean, shut up. Person who has that view.
Well, it's funny because I bring that up too because I told Kate about this. Like, NASA, like, I don't care what NASA's done for the last, like, 20 years. And she's like, what are you talking about? I was like, they are literally just looking to fun stuff like biology and see what cells do in space. And she's like, what are you talking about? And then when we went to the space station in Houston. And or the Space Center or whatever, and then we're walking around, and Kate's like, why are they doing this project? This has nothing to do with space. And I told you, they're not actually doing space stuff anymore. They're actually just trying to do stuff to get funding, so they're basically saying, like, well, you know, we'll help cure cancer or something by, like, working on the cell in space or something.
It was actually really kind of depressing when you realized, like, because I think, like, a lot of the general public and every, like, people who, because, like, we have a lot of propaganda around the moon landing. Like, not that it's fake, but actual, like, I use propaganda loosely, or, like, it's actual, like, term as, like, this something that we prop up all the time, and it's a focal point in our history that we use it as a stand-in for everything else, and, like, so until, like, I was actually there and, like, looking at stuff, I was like, oh, there's, like, a solid halt. Like, the timeline of space travel and, like, space projects stops. Like, they have, like, that timeline on the wall, and it just stops, and then it starts up again, and, like, it looks completely different. So I had some crushed moments while there.
Yeah, it's but one thing to talk about it, and then another thing when you actually go there and you actually see it, and you're like, oh, now I see what you're talking about.
Yeah. And it's also, like, sad, too, because, like, talking with those SETI people, like, they legit believe we're going to be on Mars in 2040. And then, like, the more we talk, me and you talk about it, or, like, going to the space, and I'm just kind of like, oh, no, I don't think we are.
Okay. So now we had our fun stories. So let's kind of get things. So, obviously, this episode...
That was the fun story.
So, this is going to be a deep and dark episode.
Not going to be deep and dark. It's going to be very informational. But one, what I want to stress in this is, obviously, we're going to focus on just the Apollo programs and basically Project Apollo in general and not NASA so much. So anything that relates to the Apollo-ness in general. Obviously, we have a limited amount of time, so I'm going to try to do this quickly and efficiently versus, like, this could go on for days. And you'll see, like, there's, like, 50 million reasons why. But, so we'll start off with that. I want to get that out of the way before anybody goes, like, well, NASA did this. I wasn't talking about NASA. Talking about a Project Apollo, which is kind of part of NASA, whatever. Okay, so Apollo program, aka Project Apollo, lasted from 1961 with an asterisk to 1972. Also, there's going to be a lot of asterisks. Just hang in there because this stuff is confusing. It was carried out by NASA. It was the third human space flight program. Yes, the third. With the two preceding it being basically Project Mercury, which was the first one in 1958-1963, which basically was how we sent the first man into space with one person spacecraft. So only one person rode in these.
So that was the one where he went around and then came back down,
yep.
Right?
Okay. Yep, that's all it is. And then Project Gemini, which was the second human space flight program from 1961 to 1966, which these were two-person spacecrafts, and this was kind of meant to bridge the gap between Mercury and Apollo and kind of support space travel to the moon for Apollo, because obviously they kind of needed two programs to kind of simultaneously go from, like, we're just going to kind of shoot a guy into space to we're going to the moon. And then we, you know, we're going to go in low, you know, Earth orbit to versus we're actually traveling. So this was, like, the kind of meantime. So those are that breakdown. So to get to the actual missions itself, it's kind of this is confusing. But basically, Eisenhower can kind of conceive the idea, but basically John F. Kennedy basically was the approval thing. So he said to Congress in 1961, kind of, the goal was to put a man on the moon by the 1960s. And obviously, for those of you unaware, we had the space race with the USSR taking place, which we won't talk about as much, but just know this was an underlying factor to a lot of this stuff, of, like, we need to beat the Russians to space.
We really have to thank the Russians for all the stuff we have.
Yeah.
Like, all of our technological advancement comes from the Cold War.
Yeah. So as far as the numbering system, because obviously people have heard of, like, Apollo 1, 7, you know, 11, 13, 18, the numbering system is all a lie. Apollo 17 is the last official Apollo mission that was actually done. 18, 19, and 20 were canceled. There are way more than 17 missions, per se. And there's actually not even 17, like, official Apollo missions, which is why the start date depends on how you count things. So, as far as, like, what they are, I'm going to go with, they use Saturn rockets and Apollo space parts, and so that's how they kind of started labeling these missions at the beginning. So, like, they start off with unmanned space missions, and they're called basically SA missions, basically more Saturn rockets than Apollo component parts, because the Saturn rocket was how they basically shot you up there, and the Apollo parts was how you lived and came back and everything. These missions were basically, there's five of them, they were unmanned from 1961 to 1964, and they were just testing these Saturn rockets to see, like, can we actually just shoot a rocket into space and not blow up? Then you get to the AS missions, is how they classify them. Just know that, like, this AS and stuff, it's basically, they're all based on the labeling of, like, what they call the lunar vehicles. And that's how they work. So basically, the Apollo parts for A, Saturn parts for, you know, S, and then they get to, like, 100s. These are the AS missions 100s, because that was, they were using the Saturn 1 rocket. And there's five of those from 1964 to 1965. And this was basically, they started putting some of the Apollo components on to the Saturn rocket. And so for those of you asking, what are the Apollo components of this rockets or anything? The Apollo part was made up of three major components. The command and service module, or the CSM, which kind of does kind of like the brain and everything and control a lot of stuff. The lunar module, which is kind of like the like the landing and how they were supposed to land on the moon and kind of the capsule and everything. And then the launch escape system, which is what they tested in case anything went wrong, they could shoot you out. Because that was one of the things they had to test a lot of these pads of, like, escaping people. Testing a lot of these pods to make sure that people, you know, if you need to bail, you could shoot out of the rocket and everything. And so they were kind of adding all these components to it. Then so that's when you get to the AS Missions 200 style, which now they're using the Saturn IB rockets. And so that was, there's about three of those, AS-201, AS-203 from 1966, 1967. And like I said, this is kind of them putting more rocket tests. So they're going. And then technically for unmanned missions as well, you have Apollo 4, 5, and 6, which I will also get to. Because you're like, why is 4, 5, and 6 unmanned? What's going on? So, manned missions at this time. You have AS-204 and Apollo 1, which are technically the same thing. And so, which I'll get to those in a second of why they're considered the same thing. And then Apollo 7 through Apollo 17 from 1968 to 1972 were all manned missions. And so after basically 7, they started just sending men up there consistently. So, saying all that to deal with all of the asterisks. AS-204, they considered it kind of post, they named it later to Apollo 1 because a malfunction happened and a fire and all the crew died. And so they later renamed it Apollo 1. And so because this happened, they had all these investigations with delayed scheduling. They redid something. They had to rework, recalculate it. Apollo 2 and 3 were technically canceled, and they don't actually exist.
Because numbers.
Yeah. So a lot of these, like I said, these are the way they numbered things was basically, like you said, if you ever worked in any type of science thing, they named it pretty straightforward, and you kind of change one number to change one parameter.
So essentially, like, it had, at least from my understanding of it, it's like four, like, two and three were derivatives of one, correct? They just never went up. And then you move on to the next piece, which is another derivative of the last experiment, correct?
As far as the numbering system?
Well, yeah, so, like, it denotes that there's something different in what they're doing that time.
Yes.
Yeah.
So basically, I said AS-101 and AS-201. The only thing difference is that the number that states what the Saturn rocket was.
Yeah.
And then basically they did SA because of more Saturn testing than actual Apollo parts in general. And it was actually, if anything, they were just S missions. And same with, like, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 at the tail end is the actual number of times they sent up. And then you can change the middle number for stages and whatnot. Because of this, there's all these investigations, everything. So Apollo 4, 5, and 6 are actually all unmanned missions. So they went from 1 with the crew, 2 and 3 are gone. Then 4, 5, and 6 are all basically unmanned. They're testing out everything. And the funny thing is, like, NASA itself states, kind of if you go to their website and everything, that basically the first Apollo flight is in 1968 and it starts with Apollo 7. And so that's, like, the first one they consider. They kind of said it's all thrown together, not really labeled. So, yeah, fun stuff. Any questions over that labeling system that's fun?
No.
Yeah, I think it looks messed up. But, like, once you understand why the labeling system is that way, it makes sense.
They were never intended to actually be called Apollo. They just make it sound better.
Yeah, branding.
Yes. So basically, we talked about the missions, and now we'll talk about kind of Apollo and media. I'm not even going to talk about the importance of that until we get to the but why those, because we need to know, like, you know, they did all these missions, and then now they made a ton of movies over it, and then we'll get to but why, though. That's what we do. So as far as, like, a list of the famous movies of the Apollo program, these are just, like, the ones that I picked out that were actually, like, kind of award-winning, and there's tons. For All Mankind, 1989's documentary, nominated for Best Documentary Feature. Moonshot, Inside the Story of Apollo Program, 1994 documentary. It was a miniseries based on a book by Alan Shepard, and won nominated for two Prime Times and a Peabody. The big one, Apollo 13, the 1995 movie with Tom Hanks, which Tom Hanks will be a recurring theme at this point in this stuff. And Bill Paxton, which won two Oscars. It was nominated and 24 other awards for... won the two Oscars for Best Sound and Best Film Editing, and it was actually nominated for 56 other awards. And then that's where we also get the Houston.
And that's what we're watching for our Patreon this month. So
yes. It's also where we get the Houston, we have a problem tagline, which actually never actually happened. The wording's actually different.
So you mean it was it based around a true story?
Yeah, that one, for the most part, was pretty accurate from what I read. Obviously, there were some differences, and they condensed some things, because what people don't understand is how much these are actually team things, and you can't just show, like, yeah, the team of 75 people helped me. So they condense, like, team of 75 into, like, one fictional character most of the time, is what yeah. I've seen from a lot of these.
So, Matt, hold on.
Yes.
Where does Armageddon fit into this?
Yeah, that's not on here. A, that's a fictional movie, and B, that has nothing
Leave
to do with the problem.
Him. On a jet plane. Don't
okay,
know
I had to ask. I got it out now. I had to ask. Continue.
That movie is underrated.
That movie is a weird thing. Because
underrated?
I think it's underrated. It's a good watch. When you turn off your when you turn
is
off
it
a
like defined a generation.
No. You don't understand why it's underrated, which I was going to explain. Actually, it's underrated because as growing up in this movie, I thought this movie was good. And then when I got older and, like, Rotten Tomatoes existed and everything, I realized people hated this movie and it is rated awful.
That's what I'm saying.
Really?
Like,
yeah. It is like, it's like in the 20s, I think, or 30s.
I've lived in, like, a bubble where Armageddon
yeah.
has just been great.
Yeah, I've always loved Armageddon, but I don't think that's a normal thing to think, I don't think.
Like, no, you can look it up. It is apparently rated awfully. I did not realize this until I got older.
Meteors and science, because oil drillers are more equipped than astronauts.
Yeah.
Hey, it's easier to teach oil drillers to be astronauts than the other way around.
Yeah. So, also Apollo 11, 1996 movie, nominated for a Primetime Emmy. From the Earth to the Moon, 1999 TV series with Tom Hanks, a 12-part HBO series. This is actually amazing. If you've not watched this, I would totally recommend it. It won one Golden Globe and 23 other awards. It was nominated for 33 other awards, and it's actually rated as the 95th best TV show by IMDb. It is actually really good. This next one I threw in here for Kate is called The Dish. It's a 2000 movie. It was Australia's top-grossing movie in 2000. It won 3 awards and nominated for 11 others, and apparently sheep play a vital role in this.
So that movie sounds really familiar.
But yeah, that's...
Just saying.
Apparently sheep are involved, and Australia loved this movie.
So we're going to watch this tonight, right?
No. Yeah. The Magnificent Desolation, Walk on the Move in 2005, it's a documentary. Tom Hanks again, it won one award. I didn't really care for this one, to be honest.
So is Tom Hanks just going to be like an honorary astronaut or something?
He might as well be. We haven't even finished out Tom Hanks, I don't believe. I have finished out Tom Hanks, but he actually does more stuff in here. In the Shadow of the Moon, 2007 documentary, won 6 awards and nominated for 13 others. When We Left Earth, NASA Missions, 2008 documentary. This is actually one of my favorite ones. I think it's really good. Moon Machines, which is a 2008 documentary as well. It was this one on the Science Channel. Also another one of my favorite ones. That was pretty good. And then we kind of get to First Man from last year, 2018. Won one Oscar and 23 awards for visual effects. And it was actually nominated for 157 other awards.
Holy crap.
Yeah. And then coming to why kind of we're celebrating this one, obviously for the 50th year, but Apollo 11, which is kind of, depending on when this comes out and where you live, will be released at this point, which is another documentary following the Apollo missions. And it's already won one award, one nomination from the Sundance, and it actually has 100% on Rotten Tomatoes through 74 reviews, and 8.7
IMDb. That's hard to get.
Yeah, and 8.7 IMDb and a 91 on Metacritic. And those are just like the famous ones.
Yeah, like, so the cool thing is, too, is we're going to be covering South By. Actually, we're in the process of covering South By when you're listening to this. And hopefully we'll be able to get some more interview coverage for you about that doc. So stay tuned and check the website for stuff, because that's one of the movies at South By.
Yes. So anybody have any questions on the media? Have you guys seen any of those, I guess?
So I watched... Moonshot with my dad. I watched Apollo 13 with my dad. I watched Apollo 11 with my dad. And I feel like I saw parts of From the Earth to the Moon, but I don't remember a lot of it. And then that's pretty much the only ones that I've seen. And Armageddon.
I have seen I'm sure I've seen some of these documentaries, like, when I was, like, a kid growing up, right? Like, on, you know, Discovery Channel or, like, National Geographic or blah, 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 blah. But I don't remember knowing the names. I know I've watched documentaries about the Apollo 11 specifically, but I don't know, like, which one of these is that one. I don't think I've watched any Tom Hanks. But I will be watching Apollo 11 for Patreon, so we have that. And I've seen Armageddon, like, more times than I probably should have.
Yeah. Apollo 13 is the biggest one, which obviously we'll be watching. We'll see how we watch it. I'm personally not a big fan of that movie, to be honest. But
we'll get shocked. There.
We'll get there.
You're not a fan.
Yeah. So we talked about all these missions. We talked about this project, and then we kind of talked about all these movies that are made on just the project. So now to get to the but why those of like why. So the importance of these actual Apollo missions and what they did. Apollo 7 was the first successful man-launched mission from the Apollo program, and it was actually the first live broadcast of manned mission where we shot somebody into space and people watched it.
Fake.
Yeah. Apollo 8 was the first manned mission to the moon. Basically, they orbited it, and they came back. It was also the first time we got images, and we could actually see the Earth and like the moon from like space-type stuff with Manta. Apollo 11 is the first moon landing, which is why everybody celebrates it. It's the first human to ever walk on the moon. And then that's where we get the Neil Armstrong, that's one giant step for man, one giant leap for mankind, which apparently...
One small step for man.
Yeah.
One... No, you said one giant step for man.
Oh, whatever. One small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. Apparently he butchered that line like I did, and so that's how we are here. Or apparently he said it correctly, but transmission butchered it. I don't know.
Oh, what do you mean?
He's supposed to say one step for a man, one giant leap for mankind.
Oh, so it was... Whatever, Neil Armstrong made that inclusive to it being everybody's achievement and not just his.
I know. That was great. So, yeah. And then Apollo 13, based on the movie, was the famous, which is sadly famous for the malfunction on the way to the moon, in which it was actually being live broadcast. Broadcasted that it cut off and malfunctioned and people all might die on national TV. But basically it was being live broadcast, so they cut it off for saving power, and then they had basically kind of used the moon's gravitational pull to kind of slingshot it back around and used the lunar module as like a lifeboat. And so there was a lot of malfunctions. I'm not going into all the technical details, but that's pretty much one of the famous ones because people nearly died and they didn't.
Yeah, my dad was like really scared.
Yeah. And then, obviously, because we went to the moon. Humans left Earth's orbit and went to the moon. And technically, as I said before, with the JFK thing of, like, kind of the goal, they actually completed it before the end of the 1960s. So, that's why these are important. And you should all know these.
Actually accomplished a goal.
Yes. So, what else did, like, this Apollo mission do besides, obviously, doing all of these first for, like, mankind, humankind? Technology. The Apollo program is basically has been called the greatest technological achievement in human history because obviously it hadn't been reproduced and redone. It stimulated so many areas of technology. So basically NASA actually has a NASA spinoff technology database. And as of 2016, there's about 2,000 products in this. And obviously not all these are from Apollo, but it just kind of stands to where like going to space means a lot of stuff. And then there's been over, and that's just product, because there's actually over 7,000 technologies from NASA overall that's been developed. And so, like,
makes sense.
Yeah. And so you're kind of wondering what came from Apollo. Some of the technologies that specifically came from Apollo program, CAT scanners, computer microchips. 60% of the integrated circuits at a time were part of the, that the U.S. like made, were part of the Apollo program. Insulation, fire suits for firefighters, freeze-dried fruit. Food. Joysticks. You wouldn't be playing your Xbox or your PC without this. Water purifiers. Solar panels. Heart monitors. Satellite television. And probably one that people don't think about, but they use daily. Cordless devices.
I saw the Star Trek.
I was going to say, first of all, Matt, all of this stuff was in Star Trek before we went to the movie. So Star Trek did it, is what I'm getting at here. Apollo didn't do any of this.
Yeah.
Star Trek had it.
Yeah. But yeah, all these are literally just from the Apollo program themselves of what made. Because obviously, if you know, you had to do a lot of stuff. And so from
technology... Going to space isn't easy?
Yeah, it's not. So from the third vote,
actually, kind of sad to think about it though, because it's like we got all these things from space travel, but like, and it could totally just be an exaggerated statistic that people say to be hyperbolic, but like the whole like. We went to, well, it's probably true. We went to the moon with less tech than we have in our handheld devices, and yet.
No, I mean, it's literally one of these, like, it's important because people ask, like, why push ourselves to go to space exploration, to go to farther stuff, because kind of the benefit of basically producing all this technology to, like, you know, go to the moon and everything has some effects from actual everyday life. Like, you wouldn't have joysticks. You wouldn't have a cordless device. And people take that
for
granted.
We wouldn't have CAT scans. Yes. That's really important.
You wouldn't have anything we're talking about because microchips came in from integrated circuits, and integrated circuit technology would have helped from this.
I don't know. I'm kind of... Satellite TV? Do we really need that one?
Well, probably not, but... Those are just some of the major ones. Like I said, there's a lot of more you can go through and find. I mean, I think even just lifting heavy machinery in the way they, like, built stadiums and tall stuff has actually came from the Apollo, because these rockets and everything weren't tiny. But, you know, so, like, just stuff like that you wouldn't even think about that we use every day. So architecture and everything. So probably one of the main things, but why those is I kind of combine the last two because they kind of go little hand-in-hand, per se. It would be culture and science. And so we kind of started off this thing saying, you know, JFK, like, challenged the nation to put a man on the moon. And kind of everybody kind of unified in doing this. Basically, it was a huge ordeal. They had events for launchings. Parents brought their kids. These were, like, family affairs to watch these missions go up. Okay, obviously the space race helped and wanted to, everybody, like, cheering on, we're going to beat the Russians to space and everything. But
yeah, that's,
like,
what I was going to say. I was, like, the large underlying thing about this was there was, like, essentially, like, it was a symbol of American superiority over the only other superpower in the world.
Yes.
So, like, of course, it was, like, probably one of the last times that the country was, like, I say this acknowledging that there was, like, massive issues in the country at the time because it was the 60s. Don't at me. I understand that. But, like, when you actually look at, like, the country so far as, like, getting together and banding together in, like, a science capacity, like, we had all of our resources put into it, but it was because we couldn't let the Russians do it first.
Right. And it's kind of like I said with these events and everything, they broadcasted these missions on television. Like I said, people listen to this. People watch this stuff. Apollo, like I said earlier, Apollo 8 gave everyone the first images of the Earth and from the moon and whatnot. What we looked at is estimated, probably, obviously, depending on your calculation of population and stuff, everything like that, about 20% of the world's population watched and listened to the Apollo 11 moonwalk. It's about, like, 600 million or so. And then, I mean, there's not that many people married. And then an estimated about 25% of the world's population, not just the U.S., but, like, the world itself, watch and kind of listen to a live or a delayed broadcast of astronauts apparently reading the Bible on Christmas Eve, the creation story. So basically people literally, you know, so, like, a ton of people just turned out to watch somebody read a book in space, and they thought it was a fascinating.
I am not gonna lie. I may have watched the Canadian astronaut Chris Hadfield.
But not sure. There's you know how many astronauts there are.
No, like the really famous Canadian astronaut that has like been going to space right now.
I like how you say this, and yet you don't know the name.
Chris I'm pretty sure it's Chris Hadfield. Hold on. Yes, Chris Hadfield. Okay, I was correct. I did know the name. But we had that whole Kelly incident on the Mars episode. I just wanted to make sure.
It's also one of those, I didn't know he was Canadian.
Oh, yeah, Chris Hadfield's Canadian.
Well, obviously, you just told me.
Yeah. So what I was going to say was, like, when you talk about, like, tuning into astronauts to read a book, I mean, obviously, it's a much smaller scale, or is it? But, like, there was a video that went live of Chris Hadfield singing the David Bowie song
Yep.
In space. And I lost my crap, and I, like, still rewatch that video because it's really cool because he's singing it in space. Like, he's singing Major Tom in space, and it's crazy. Like, it's cool to, like, see something like that. So, I mean, granted, we're at a different, like, it's different in that it's, like, not the first time we've seen something from space, but, like, I could only imagine, like, that amplified at that time. Like, I totally buy mundane entertainment being excellent entertainment because it is in space.
Pretty much. And so, much as we say things are broadcast and whatnot, it wasn't like we're getting these Prime Video stuff that we get either. Some of them were, like, delayed. We might even just get, like, messaging. It might just be a reporter just listening to, like, a radio feed and just kind of talking on camera sometimes, depending on what was going on. Except these weren't just, like, high class. You know, we have satellites and it's actually following close-ups. You know, we can see people waving out the window or something. It was literally just people sitting in a park, watched a rocket went off, and then just kind of watched it. And then people talked about it. And they sat there and watched it some more, and they loved it. So, like I said, with kind of cultural impact, it grew all this interest and investment in natural sciences along the way. We talked about some of the technology, we'll get back to it, but also natural sciences. They collected moon samples, as Adrian mentioned. We have moon rocks, studying things. You know, people are getting the opportunity to study things from a foreign world that we've never been to. Like, the possibility of life. Back then, they thought life might have been common. It wasn't until, like, they start flying by with some of the earlier projects that they realized, oh, life not as common as one thought. General biology, chemistry, geology. as we did the Mars episode, as we talked about one for our Patreon, people know how physics works in the universe. They kind of know some of the, you know, maybe even the chemistry of these, what's going on. You know, and what some of this geology, like, they're, you know, what the planet's made of, but people don't know how biology works compared to Earth.
Yeah, so, I mean, and I'll remove my stuff from the beginning and just kind of put it in here. So when I was in grad school, my first year of grad school, one of my advisors was actually, he was a part of SETI, so the Organization for the Search for Extraterrestrial Life, or Intelligence, it's not life, and extraterrestrial intelligence. And he was writing a book on, essentially it was like the anthropology of, like, extraterrestrial life, like, one, how we would respond and, like, what it would look like. And so I did all the research for that. But the coolest part about it was I actually got to go to a closed door SETI conference and listen to people talk about this. And it's insane because, one, I was the dumbest person in the room, which was really cool because, like, I got to talk to Jill Tarter, which, if you ever seen Contact, which is based on the Carl Sagan book Contact, the main character was written about her, like, was based on her, which is really cool. But, like, when you hear them talk about, like, there was a section on communicating, and it was all about using physics and mathematics and those things to communicate across. But then there was this larger section that was just about theorizing the types of different biological life that could happen out there. And it was nothing but, like, theories, because it was really cool to see all these minds, like, kind of refuse the idea that, one, life only happens on our planet, and two, life had to happen our way. I will never be in a room that smart again. Sorry, guys. But, like, just hearing them talk about, like, both talk about mathematics as a language and physics as a language, to going on to theorize about, like, what types you would see, what types of life and, like, what biology could be out there. It was crazy. I mean, it was crazy in a good way. Like, it was stuff that I had never really thought about. And I got to transcribe all the transcribe the entire conference. I have those notes somewhere still, but it was, yeah.
There's actually basically that whole thing is an entire field of study called exobotany.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. It's a lot of work. Thought about before. It takes a lot of, like you said, physics and kind of how it relates to biology, along with biology and how it relates to itself.
Yeah, because I think there was a botanist there, I think, but he was just kind of like, I want to talk about this, but we got to talk about microbes, because right now that is the only thing we understand. And, like, of course they brought up Antarctica and stuff like that, but he his part was just saying that he was thinking that ultimately, like, in order for any sort of plant life to develop, it would have to develop in a different way given the conditions on the planets. And so he had, like, cool pictures that he had mocked up of what he thought would happen on with a plant that, like, fed, like used something else. So, yeah, it was really interesting. That should have been my space story.
Adrian,
I was just letting her go because I didn't want her to think I didn't know what a biome was again.
Yes.
After her sorry guys comment.
Yes.
What is physics?
No,
that's super cool, Kate. Obviously super, super cool.
So we have also, like, kind of this weird thing, the blue marble. Basically, it's a picture of Earth that you see. It's one of the very common one. You've seen it everywhere. It basically kind of actually sparked environmentalism because it kind of showed kind of how special our planet was, because you basically have the Earth, you have all the colors and everything, and then you have this vast blackness or emptiness of space, and it's just isolation of, like, there's nothing there. And if, like, we destroy, you know, basically the Earth, there's nothing there outside. It's just empty.
Yeah, I mean, because isn't it Carl Sagan who has the small blue dot quote?
I believe so. There's a lot of people with blue dot quotes.
Well, no, but he was, like, one of the first people to make that quote, like, in the 70s, where he was essentially saying, and his was from a different perspective, but essentially saying, like, to think that we're unique and shouldn't take care of ourselves is a really fleeting idea and a really, like, short-minded idea. When you look at us in the perspective of everything else, we're this small blue dot. Yeah. I'm getting sad. Why am I getting sad?
Oh, it gets better. So we talked about
it. It gets better.
Which
in Matt terms means it doesn't.
So we talked about the natural sciences, but also the simulation of, like, these many areas of technology. What people may not realize in general is just science. Yeah. People always, you know, people say science, they think immediately natural science, they think biology and life, which is great, but, like, you know, engineering is technically a science. Mathematics is a science. Chemistry is a science. Geology is a science. Even just, like I said, doing research and testing things is just a form of doing science. You're doing something. And kind of like we talk about, like, people's interests and how they cultivate it, you know, when people are growing, this is where it gets really sad. At Apollo's peak, the Apollo program employed 400,000 people and required support for over 20,000 industrial firms and universities. And to let all this sink in, as of 2018, NASA employs 17,337 people.
So, one, that's depressing. Two, I do also think a lot of that has to do with you no longer need a team of 20 women to man your computers.
Correct. Correct. That is also correct.
But it also doesn't adjust for a drop that huge.
Right.
Like, that adjusts for a small drop, not a drop that large.
Right, which is kind of what I was going to say the next point of, basically, we had 400,000 plus over 20,000, like, mine doing engineering, robotic, chemistry, biology, electronics, actual rocket science, physiology, geology, and then kind of what you said for mathematics. Oh, so much mathematics.
Yeah.
And lots of mathematics.
But,
like, we may not have the development of all these teams because they're not needed, but the point of the matter is, it's still these people, like, you had that many smart people who did, like, like, just learned and did so much. I guess, just like I said, they invest and stimulate their brain so much.
Because it's not even just that, too, because, like, if you look at, like, the partnerships and the internships that were built, like, the 20,000 that were built outside of NASA proper, so, like, those are people that I'm assuming are people who are pushing their fields.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's 20,000 people. Like, that makes up for more than just the NASA scientists.
Correct.
And, like, that type of progression makes up more, too. I do want to take, like, a moment to, like, just say, like, it's also one of those sad things, because I do want to see, like, a gender breakdown, because I know, like, especially, like, when, so along, like, in the 60s and early 70s, like, mathematics was actually seen as, like, a woman's job, because it was seen as secretarial work, and so, like, they staffed a lot of those things, so I'd be interesting to see, like, how the drop happens. Like, does it actually push a lot of that out, too? And, like, because it ultimately, I would assume that, like, this massive drop in employability in these things means that, like, the number of people studying it gets smaller, and then, like, what pockets are affected is something I'd be interested in knowing.
Right. Obviously, I do not have the demographic breakdown to 400,000 people.
Well, I know, but I feel like they're out there, and I would be really interested to see that, because to your point, when you lose something that funds ingenuity and intelligence and the search for that much, you lose a large section of the population, and when you lose jobs that were deemed specifically for, you know, when they are gendered like that and they get pushed out, then it's like, okay, so now, like, if NASA had just continued on that trajectory, the field of STEM probably wouldn't need all of, like, it probably wouldn't have a lot of the problems that it has now with pushing, one, towards more people in it overall, or two, pushing for more women in it overall, if we had actually stayed on that trajectory of pushing forward and having this large of a talent pool.
Right. Yeah, no, it definitely just sad to think about it. And then, like I said, just so many people doing so many different fields of just, like you said, and you know, being creative and inventing things and pushing every field to the max that we just don't see anymore. Now we have 400,000 freaking comic book writers or something that, like, do nothing.
But, I mean, like, and honestly, and I say this as somebody with a liberal arts degree, me and my advisor, when we were in that room, like, he's a smart man, but, like, there were people actually building, like, different types of radio waves to send out and ping across space. And I was like, we're cool, but we're not, like, that cool. We don't come into this equation until life is found. That's where we come in. But they're the actual people finding the light, or the intelligence.
Well, that's another thing we talk about, because much as we talk about the back end and, like I said, all the just mathematics and basically human calculators and, you know, rocket scientists, we're not even talking about the actual astronauts, which, once again, Patreon episode of, like, an astronaut is, like, some of the brightest people, and why I've always found the profession, like, fascinating. One, you could travel space, but two, like, you can't just be like, oh, I'm just gonna be an engineer. No, you need to be an engineer, you need to be a mathematician,
you need to be a linguist.
Yeah, you gotta be a linguist, you gotta know biology, you better be a chemist. Like, you're like basically an expert in, like, three fields. Not just one, you know, three fields. And then it's like, oh, well, we only have six people and we need to cover 18 fields, so we're just gonna get six of the smartest people to cover all these fields.
Yeah.
And at this point, you know, there's three people. And so basically up there, you have basically you and two other people, to where if something malfunctioned, you better be able to fix it. You have a level of supplies to fix it. If somebody gets hurt, you have to fix it. If you have a issue, any type of number one things, you have to be able to fix it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and I know that was one of the reasons why some of the first, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think a lot of the first astronauts came directly from the high levels of the Air Force.
Yes. Because
they had to keep cool heads and know how to, like, deal with those things and not be afraid of dying is another thing.
Yeah.
But, like, they had, like, those are the types of characteristics that came from that level of pilotry.
Yeah, they did test pilots for the most part. Yeah. The people that are like, you're probably going to die doing this. Let's see if you can do it. And they loved it.
No, I mean, so. And it's amazing. Like, and that's also why the current state of the program is sad, because it's like people want to give their lives for this type of exploration, which is one of those things, like, and it's weird, right? So, like, when we look at Apollo and we look at all the media that we have on Apollo and how much the U.S. relives that, like, whether it's in Ryan Gosling in First Man or a documentary celebrating the 50th anniversary, ultimately it's weird to see that type of, I guess not weird, but, like, we have, like, this nostalgia of when our political will to go to space or explore space outweighed the costs. So, like, political will, and I talk about it on our Mars episode, you should really go get our Patreon. Political will is a phrase used to describe when countries or organizing bodies make decisions, the cost has to outweigh, or the benefit has to outweigh the cost. And you have to have your public believe that the benefit outweighs the cost. And so, like, just looking at how media fits in, I'm just kind of like, damn, it would be cool if we had sent somebody to Mars and had an actual, like, Mars movie to talk about and not just a whole bunch of Tom Hanks.
Yeah. But no, like, because we kind of bring up, people want to learn and research and explore and just kind of push they want to take risks, they want to do challenges, they want to push the limits of basically not only just technology in general, but everything. Like, because people don't realize how much space does on the human body. And so they were pushing the human body to the limits. They were pushing, technology to the limits. They were pushing pretty much anything you can think of to the limits. Yeah. And everything they did was a first.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know, it's one of those things where, like, it's great to think about and remember, but then it's also just kind of like, I feel like we're just constantly living in this memory of Apollo and not really doing anything else.
Yeah, so as much as I enjoy this and I talk about this stuff, it's why I personally, and I've seen obviously a lot more of the documentaries, and I really do not like the films for the most part, is because of that. Like, it's just nostalgia stuff of, like, I didn't get that, and we aren't doing anything close to that. Like, it's just like, cool, we stuck in this decade. Awesome. It's now been, coming up 50 years. Do something more.
And I think NASA's had their budget slashed every time it's come up for budget approval. Like,
yeah, so apparently in 2019 they got their highest budget in a decade.
Oh, well, there we go.
But in today's
standard. Isn't it, like, sectioned off money, though? Like, they can only use parts of it for certain things?
I'm not sure exactly how they do the budget anymore. All I know is last time I knew, at this point, I think NASA was getting like 3-5% of the actual national budget, per se. And now we get like 0.3% to NASA of the national budget.
That's not depressing.
What, all this is to say, like, what are your thoughts on just, like, people own space? What are space laws like? Like, why can Elon Musk just shoot shit into space? Should we just privatize space stuff and just, like, let people shoot their own astronauts into space?
So can
we
do that? There is actually a UN governing body that has to do with, with space. It sounds weird, but essentially, like, when in, like, the 70s, 80s, it ended up getting put together because we seemed, it was after the WOW signal, after we got that, and it looked like we may get actual contact with life. It's kind of defunct now, but it also kind of exists. Like, there was a lot of talk of sectioning off space and making it, like, UN territory, like, everybody interacts, like, almost like a federation type thing. But I don't know the state of it now, because I did this research in, like, 2015, and a lot has changed in the world. But so far as I know, so long as nothing is crossing an international boundary, you can send it up.
Yes.
So, like, you can send it up, and then once it goes out, it's fine. But you also have to have cooperation, especially if it's manned, you have to have cooperation with the other countries out there. But ultimately, like, you can shoot something up within your own airspace, because essentially, like, we control airspace.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, if that makes sense. Like,
so should we, like, as a society, be, like, privately funding these people who do want to actually do go into space? Or, like, what's the fix here? Other than not having idiots run budgets.
That's the real fix, because you don't want anything privatized to the point where people get locked out.
So, yeah, that's the thing. So there is a big there's that giant, not really controversy, but decision of, like, where is space heading? And you are seeing a lot of these private companies do it, like SpaceX and everything else. But it's one of those, I think people in general wouldn't mind if, why don't we have NASA doing it? Well, at this point, NASA doesn't have the money, and they're not having the resources to do that. And so, and these other people are like, I'm worth, like, $5 billion. Why not try to build this out and make money doing this? And so I can, I want to go to space. Obviously, our government doesn't really care whether the people in NASA, and obviously NASA's changed, but for a long time, people sat complacent on NASA. Like, yeah, we went to the moon in 1970. I know it's 1985, but we already did that. Let's just do some low orbit stuff. Send some stuff. Like, people in NASA really sat around on their hands and just lived off of the Apollo missions forever, and they didn't do much. And people grew tired of it, and so people are like, I got money. Let's actually go to Mars. Let's go to the space exploration to do it. And there is a fear that people will get locked out of doing it, but unless they're going to actually, fund it and make people, care from the standpoint of, like, NASA, where it's, publicly and government thing, there's not a lot we can do, per se. It's either we get done and have to get done privately because nobody cares on the other side, or we finally open up and give it actual resources.
Yeah, and
we can talk all we want, but if you have no resources, you are limited no matter what.
Well, I was going to say, to Matt's point, like the I don't like the idea of privatization, but it's probably going to be the only vehicle that we have to get there, and a lot of it has to do with like not just like what Matt said with funding, but like with so much crap going on. Humans can't get out of their anthropocentric view of like it is just us and this is our world and we do stuff with this. They don't have like because everything is so tumultuous, like people don't have like this far-sighted goals of doing more and doing more outside. And so like to build up the political will within the populace to get them to like actually start funding. And it like as much as it is like stupid people in Congress who don't understand science, it's also a lot of like the political will of the people not willing to back these things because there are 10 other things we can be doing. So like as much as it's Congress, it also has to do with people. I mean, like you've seen it on Twitter, like people will rant about something when like a space thing is being done, and it's like, but space is actually really important, and if we want to survive, it's actually really vital.
So one, to kind of go on that, we have, like she said, political will and thing. Kind of the reason the space program like kind of died out was that Apollo 13 mission that was so famous, people realized like, oh, people are going to die, people could die, and they're like, oh, we can't afford to like have our heroes die. And so they're like, we don't want to take this risk anymore, because what people don't realize, this stuff is dangerous. People do die, and people will die.
But something like just recently happened, right? Like, didn't SpaceX like just launch people for the first time? Like the first time we've privately launched somebody into space? Like they docked with the International Space Station?
Because it happened. Because the funny thing is, it happened right after.
Yeah, like fucking 2 days ago.
No, because we had just finished Mars, the last actual episode, and then I got on Twitter before I went to fell asleep, and it just happened.
First ever privately built and launched spacecraft capable of carrying human crew. So, if something's working, we're shooting stuff into space with rich people money.
Yeah.
But, I mean, unless, like I said, the people want to do this, like, the main incident I always think about, when we sent the car to space and SpaceX was driving around, people were complaining that, well, Star Wars hired these directors and my world's going to end. And I'm like, we just launched a vehicle into space and people are driving around and we just don't care.
Yeah, and that was one of the things, too, because, like, you can care about multiple things at one time. Like, you can care about that, but you can also care about space. But the problem is that a lot of the way people look at things is just how they immediately affect them, and to them space doesn't immediately affect them, so there's no point. And then when you put in the loss of life, and when you realize that somebody could die, especially people that we've built into like mammoth or like mountains within our society, like astronauts, then it's hard to build up any sort of will to get any sort of law passed. So like I think privatization is what's going to happen, because you'll have money and you won't have, like, they're not under the strict regulation of NASA, because, like, the only stuff that NASA can send up, it has to be approved.
Yeah, like, so basically the one thing I talk about, I believe it was the rover that just got on Mars, I believe that project that went away, or might be another project, but I believe it's the one that just landed this past year. They decided this mission, and they were looking at the budget, there were two things that came on board, and one was to go to Titan and use an under methane, kind of explorer thing to send it to Titan to see if there was life on this, like, basically methane moon. And basically it was that or go to Mars, and that was, like, they had to choose, and they went to the Mars one, which was sad, because Titan's fascinating and stuff, but, like, that's all they get. Like, they get, like, basically one or the other, and depending on how you do, that's, like, the way they set everything out. Where privatization, you can do pretty much what you want because it's your company, and if I want to spend all my money and infrastructure and resources going to Mars, I can do that.
Well, what's the connection? So I'm looking at, like, SpaceX stuff, which is probably what I'm going to be doing for, like, the rest of my night. A lot of this stuff is, some of these contracts are paired with NASA. So, like, what's the connection there? Is the privatization, like, helping this process along? Where, like, NASA's like, hey, we want to go do this thing, but the government doesn't give us enough money, so can you go do this mission thing?
That's literally how it works. NASA's like, please help us, bring blood dry, go.
All right.
So, I mean, yeah, they do work in tandem, and it is like...
But it's working still... so far. I mean, they just sent... This privatization just sent up man-made crew into space.
Yeah, and then, like, that's huge. That it does, too, is, like, you're actually creating a sector of jobs, and if you have a sector to go into, then people... More
yeah,
people
that will that was going to be my next point.
More people will start being rocket scientists, and more of that will start getting done, and so these fields that are seen as non-lucrative because it's such a highly competitive job market, you end up in something that becomes... greater.
That's what I was gonna say, because like I know we were talking about like losing all the jobs, like, well, if private sectors open up, there's jobs there.
I mean, like I said, it's a lot of it just doing resources and then people, what they're doing with the budget type stuff, and I don't know, it just it sucks, because like I said, and we like, because people from the political wheel of things, like, you know, we pay people who act in movies millions of dollars.
Yep.
Mm. And it's like, people care about a movie star. Like, I don't care. But they make more money than, like, astronauts.
I care about Buzz Aldrin punching people in the face.
That's always great. That is always great. But no,
link that in the show notes.
But that is, like,
basically... deservedly so.
But it's what people focus on and kind of what the public wants. They're like, we'll pay, you know, some person, you know, who dribbles a ball or, you know, throws a pass, you know, $100 million, but we're gonna pay our astronauts maybe $75,000.
And yeah, like, to put it in perspective, people at NASA don't make great money.
They make good money, but they don't make money considering.
But it's not money that they would get in the private sector, or if they were doing.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's just focus. Like, I would bankrupt Hollywood to fund NASA. I wouldn't care. Like, those people actually provide nothing of a service to society. You know, I mean, people say they scapegoat their kids all the time about, like, they saw a movie. No, like, actual doing stuff works. And it's like, we pay people worried about some person who made $100 million last year and what they did. Astronaut went and got 5 degrees, has 4 fields.
As much as I love the Matt Damon movie, I would much rather have someone reading me a book actually from Mars than that entire movie.
I don't prefer the movies, and that's one of the reasons why these Pablo stuff, they're great, and I enjoy some of the documentary, especially, like, the technology and what we got and, you know, and the innovation, but it's... The movies, obviously, they kind of have to make it like a movie and spruce it up a little bit to make it good and entertaining, which people don't think realize, and also, like, today's day, too, of, like, some of the major complaints about movies and other shows we've talked about is science is technically boring.
I've been there when Matt's taken readings on his plants. It was extremely boring and hot outside.
Yeah. And this other part of, like, the taking risk of challenges of, you're going to fail.
Yeah.
And you're going to fail a lot more than you're actually going to succeed. And people these days don't like to fail at all. And so we do play a very safe thing, which is kind of the decline of the Sapal program, too, of when it came up, because after Kennedy, you know, Johnson was gone, we had basically Nixon we had two proposals again that came, and it was one to, let's go to Mars, or let's just make a space shuttle and fly around the Earth. And he said, I don't really care about space, we'll just fly around the Earth. And that's what we've done for the last, like, 50 years.
Yeah.
Which is crazy, kind of, in the cultural aspect, which is when we watch, and if you ever watch anything or show documentaries about a lot of this stuff, these people here... Like, we talk about it, like, oh my gosh, the people that lived in this era and were doing this, they actually are sad because the moon was just a test. They want to go to Mars.
Yeah.
Like, they're just sad. Like, Mars was their end game, to go to Mars, not the moon. The moon was just like, can we do this? Oh, yeah, let's just get there. This is our trial run, practice runs. We're going to Mars.
Yeah.
Which kind of, I guess, sort of, I guess I'll go over these fun facts and then we get in the thing of, like, could we talk about all the money and how it relates to stuff? Apollo was kind of, it was expensive to extent for the time period, but if not expensive now. So all these Apollo missions and the budget for the time, they spent $24 billion.
For all of them?
Yes. About between 20 to 24 billion, depending. I think they thought it was 20 and then they itemized. So I think it's like $23.9 to $24 billion, which I believe in this day and age is about $110 billion total. It was at the time the largest commitment to the amount of, like, resources to something outside of, like, war, like, during a time of peace.
Was it really a time of peace, though?
Well, technically, there was, like, no, like, fighting, per se. It wasn't like we had to go manufacture a bunch of guns and just start running over. Yeah.
No, that's completely fair. But like this was funded purely out of we need this technology because we will kill the Russians if we need to.
Correct. But we didn't actually attack anybody.
I know. I'm just saying. I know. I really like that statement because it like there was definitely.
Well, the reason the statement's put in there and it quoted that because. If you start looking at how much resources were dedicated during times of, like, actual war, then it...
Yeah, that's fair. Like, that is fair, but I also think that, like, you... Like, there also has to be that understanding that the reason that much was agreed to get spent on during a time of peace was because Russians.
Yes, for the possibility. Correct. We talked about this stuff. The Saturn and the Machinery Stadium... The Saturn V rockets was actually taller than the Statue of Liberty. And basically, because it was built by a man who wanted to go to Mars, and he was told he had to go to the moon. But that thing's huge.
Overall, that would just be soul crushing to you.
Well, we know about him. Basically, he was a Russian? Was it Russian? I believe
he was German.
Was it German? Might have been German. Yeah. Von Braun.
He was German, and then after the war, he got asylum to come to the United States and was cleared of everything.
Yeah, and basically headed to NASA, he's basically the person designed for all these Saturn rockets, everything. He wanted to go to the moon. Basically, Nixon made a decision of, like, we're just going to fly around the Earth. He actually quit NASA and then died of cancer a few years later. His body quit. We're not going to Mars. Overall, 12 astronauts have walked on the moon, and that was all within a 41-month span, and none have since. So in 41 months, we had 12 people walk on the moon, and we haven't done anything. As you mentioned kind of earlier, a flip phone actually has more processing power than all the Apollo computers. Basically, by the 1990s, essentially all the technology and simple products surpassed the processing power of the Apollo computers.
Yeah.
The Apollo 11 original tapes are missing to this day. And basically, due to budget cuts and then the lack of actual magnetic tapes, NASA just started reusing all their tapes. So in the 70s and 80s, they reused over 200,000 tapes for data, and apparently it's believed they taped over.
Because it was a conspiracy, Matt.
Yes. NASA did spend 3 years trying to find them. They actually got some of the other footage from it, not necessarily the original tape, but like other level, and they spent $230,000 trying to digitally restore and make it look all nice. But yes, this is where we get conspiracy theories, because the Apollo 11 original tapes are gone.
So. Which, like, the explanation is really simple. Like, they were poor and wanted to send people to space, so they just reused tapes instead of spending more money on tapes.
We always find it's a shortage of something, whether it be ink, printers, or magnetic tapes.
That's a deep recall. I don't think we've talked about that in a long time. That was bravo. Bravo, Matthew. Bravo.
But yeah, to kind of go to put in perspective, like you said, they spent... NASA's budget this year was, you know, $21 billion, you know. I think when they calculated it, like, when you, like, kind of factor it down and, like, make it now, I think it's almost like the budget's, like, I think it's half of what they spent on during some of the peak years.
Yeah.
So the peak years of also of NASA, the Apollo program made up 70% of NASA's overall budget in 1967 when it peaked. But for most, they had a good few years where it was making up almost 60, 65, 67, and then peaked at 70% of NASA's overall budget. That's how much reason. So, yeah, those are basically some fun Apollo facts. We talked about, like I said, it's important from what we did. It obviously had it has underlining, like, war terms, because obviously we got guiding systems and GPS and everything out of this.
How do you think we figured out? Yeah.
But, it was, people talk about it. Like I said, they make movies every single year over this, and there's a reason they do it, because it was a great time. But if you ever want to, like, see how people, I don't necessarily really feel or whatnot, but, like, just go listen to people who were around there in that time, or just, like, growing up watching it, and then especially, like, the physicists and people who work at NASA before, just, like, how, like, sad and betrayed they feel that we just stopped all of a sudden. That's all I have. I don't know if anybody has anything else.
Well, I mean, like, to that point, like, there were people, and I already said it, like, there were people that said who were like, we're going to be on Mars in 2040. I fully believe it. And then you had, like, the guy's been on Star Talk a few times, but I don't remember his name. He has a really weird voice, but he was talking about how he watched everything happen as a kid, and now he just has no hope of anything happening anymore. And it was depressing, and then he smiled and said, but this is my field.
Jesus.
Like, it's one of those things where it's like, science can only go as far as we let it. And so, like, I guess, like, doing, like, final thoughts and stuff, like, there are very pressing issues in the world today that isn't this, and I understand that, but I think people also need to understand that you can think about multiple things at one time, and we need to be putting more, as a country and as people, like, if we want to increase women in STEM or people of color in STEM, start, like, looking to this future of space and, like, literal space exploration, not just low space orbit, because that's things like SpaceX are going to create a number of jobs for people to start pushing themselves to those things. Because when you have so many scientists pushing themselves and creating new technological advances in the goal of a thing, you're opening up so many more doorways for jobs to be created for other scientists. And so for me, like, all of it's interconnected. Like, we can worry about problems that are huge in our communities or our country, but we also need to understand that when it comes to funding stuff like NASA and space exploration and stuff like that, that is actually a really big thing too. And so you should probably think about that as well. That's all I have. I'm kind of sad.
I got an intertwined fun fact. And fun fact, the 1986, the NASA tried to get kids back into, you know, wanting to go into space. And so they had what's called the Challenger. And basically, we talk about the, Kate, you kind of
That's
made a joke,
the
but the teacher who went up to, went in the rocket, she was actually an astronaut teacher. So she was actually, like, they say she's a teacher, but she was an astronaut in the NASA program. obviously, that blew up and she died on live TV. But what people really don't realize is apparently during that time, she was not the first invited, per se, because the guy who was Big Bird and played Big Bird wrote a documentary in which he stated that NASA wanted Big Bird to go, and he was actually the first civilian ever invited. But obviously, Big Bird's like 8 foot, and so it never actually happened. NASA confirmed that the talk did happen, but they never obviously anything approved. But Big Bird did not go up in that shuttle, and so instead they got Christine. And she blew up on national TV instead of Big Bird. And people talk about, like, if Big Bird would have blown up on national TV, how much that would have been, like,
devastating for children?
Yes.
Like, I don't think that's a conversation. That's a conversation for Mr. Rogers.
But yeah.
It's not wrong.
No, it just... It sucks because, like, I think, like, one of the big reasons why Apollo matters is because it did push us so far. But now, Apollo, as much as it matters, is kind of like our Achilles heel in all of this. It's where we keep saying we went and we did. But it's like, I think, Matt, you, like, talked about that about, like, high school athletes and stuff. Okay, but what did you do now? Like, it's like one of those things for, like, NASA and, like, our country is so far as it comes to space. Like, yeah, we did that. What did we do now? Like, what are we doing now? Like, it, to me, it's kind of like, it's kind of hard. And so now, after having this wonderful episode, which you're listening to after I watched Apollo 11, I'm hoping that I went into Apollo 11 and didn't just get incredibly sad after watching the documentary.
Adrian?
I'm just trying to think of something that hasn't really been said. I mean, I think... It's hard, I mean, we said this at the top of the episode, it's hard for me to conceive and be in the mindset of people thinking, like, space isn't important. Like, dude, like, we're humans. We should be naturally wanting to know more about the things that we don't know about. It's like, why wouldn't we want to
more
go look at those things?
Frontier.
Yeah, like, why would you not want to have a Federation and a Starfleet and meet the Klingons? But not really that. I think we need to know more about this stuff, man. We can, like, see this stuff from our house. Like, why, like, the progress has stopped, and now people like Elon Musk are paying to shoot people into space, and they might beat, you know, our actual government-funded space program to things because we aren't putting enough importance on space as like a society. It's very sad. But to that, I would say if you know young people, go push them to be in STEM and show them things like SpaceX and things like that just to get them interested. Because I don't know if we're going to race any Russians anytime soon to kind of get national interest back into space. So I think it kind of just relies on if your kid, if you're listening to this and your kid thinks that, oh yeah, I think I like space. Okay, then let go take them to the Houston place or take them somewhere where they can see space so they can get into it. Because we need more kids who like space stuff. There's plenty of kids that I work with now who are in computer science and AP computer science and AP computer principles, and they all want to go work for Facebook and Google and blah 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 blah. But I've been telling them to like, why don't you go look in the? I'm going to go start telling them, why don't you go look in the private sector of space and go shoot up the next, I don't know who, whenever they're old and shooting stuff in space, they can ask XYZ character if they want to be in this shuttle that hopefully won't, you know, explode, because I guess they're good enough to shoot stuff into space. So I think we're good there. I don't know. One long way to say, tell kids to go be interested in STEM and space. And that's the only thing that you can really do as a person, because you can't influence law people to not be terrible
but
old white people.
But we can vote actual science people into Congress.
We could do that.
We can do that.
We could do that.
You can try to do that.
We can try to do that. We live in Texas. We can try very hard, get close, and then cry at the end of the night.
Obviously, I read this episode because I've always enjoyed, and obviously I enjoy space and watch it. I watch pretty much everything that has to do with space that I've seen documentary-wise. I personally don't like movies like we've mentioned. I hope we get somewhere, but it's really depressing to think about, because there is just a bunch of people where Kate kind of made the joke last night of, what do you tell your children? We watched a Mars rover kind of sing a tune and die, and that was what we got. but overall, like Adrian talked about with the kids and stuff, of like actually encouraging people to take these risks and want to learn and research and explore and just move forward and push everything. I don't believe people have that anymore. I, to be bluntly honest, I think people these days are cowards when it comes to a lot of this stuff. My field of science and study was about the natural world, and like mine, just like a lot of the others, is now like, it's almost just become farming in the sense of like, what can it do to help humans here? And it's like, well, that's not necessarily what science and pushing the boundaries are for. Of just like, oh, can we make some better crops? No, we want to know more and what is not known, and just learning and innovating your mind. And we talk about like, obviously 400,000 people and it's been like automated, but you know, if you get people, you know, that are just even in mathematics and stuff and pushing these limits, we may not, the field may be automated now, but as long as they're growing, they may create new fields that we don't know of. Like robotics, as much as I've kind of mentioned it, that wasn't a field for, I mean, it's how much has come today. I mean, obviously, it, you know, still I think 1920s maybe when it started, but look at it from where then to now. Rocket science, geology, biology, electronics, and, you know, computer science, as Adrian's mentioned, these things were kind of, you know, there, but look at them, compare them now. When you get people who think and are smart and want to do stuff that's not been done before, you're going to create new things. And you might create new jobs. And why it's depressing when I see people, my thing, I know we do the podcast over media, but media depresses me of how much we put focus in like movies and actors and actresses and what did they do? And, oh, I got my kid to go see this movie. Who cares? I'm sorry. But like having them actually go learn stuff and not like, oh, they saw a movie and they're inspired. You may be able to get a spark, but you're not teaching them anything and they're not learning anything.
Like they can get to the point, Matt, I think it's important for them to get inspired, but then it's actually on the parent to be like, okay, but now I'm going to put you in space camp, or now I'm going to like start nurturing that spark that was there. Like you actually have to follow it up with more programs that are focused on that.
Right. But what I'm saying in general is like, we put so much focus on like that stuff and like doing that instead of like focusing on like why don't we have people do these other things? And you talk about STEM and all. To get people interested in STEM and engineering, you how you do that? You have them go do STEM and engineering. And, like, they need to actually do it. And you see, and you show them to do that and actually physically do that, not just, like I said, we care more about a millionaire person like Matt Damon on Mars, but we're not putting money because basically people don't care.
I guess it's also different too, because if you look at Star Trek, that was before we were actually in space. So when astronauts now, like the dude who wore the Klingon shirt on the ISS, like people who were inspired by Star Trek, we didn't have people already in space. It was something that was unexplored. So it kicked them in the butt to like actually go and be the first to do those things. And now that's not really there.
No. And like I said, we have, because the main thing I think about when we talk about like the difference between media and inspiration and stuff is a Jurassic Park episode, they did a study, like I said, about 2/3 of kids, they love dinosaurs. They don't know why, but they're inspired by dinosaurs. We don't have that many paleontologists.
So, but that's also because paleontology does not make money.
Which is, but another thing, like I said, because we fund money into other forms of media.
Well, one, I've spent like the last, 7 years of my life in college access. And I think it's just all about making sure that your kids have the right kind of stimuli to kind of, like Matt was kind of saying, kind of get them interested in those kind of camps. And like you said, like put them in space camp. I think that's where it really stems from, because they can like Star Wars and like all this stuff, but if you're not stimulating them to want to be interested in that by the time they hit high school, then they're just going to want to go work for Facebook, and they're going to want to go work for Google, even if they are in like the STEM fields, because that's where the money's going to be. But if you encourage like that creativity to kind of be focused in that space route, then by the time they hit high school, they'll be like one of my kids who's going, because at our school we require the kids to go to a summer program in between their junior and senior year, and one of my kids is going to an aerospace camp, and he's like the only one. The rest of them are going to like medical camps and all this stuff, but he's like the only one who wants to go to a aerospace camp. He's going to like two of them this summer, and I think that's because his parents took him to space stuff and not just like watching things on TV, because he's not even really that big of a nerd as we would kind of classified as, sort of like lacking Star Wars and Star Trek. He just really likes space.
Yeah, like, so I
get your kids involved in stuff, and like I think that's like the best way to do it.
Yeah, no, like I don't want to say media like people aren't interested in thing, but like as a person who's hung out with scientists for a long time, for every like one or two that you find are really nerdy, there's a bunch of like, or like, you know, love pop culture type stuff, there's a bunch of them that don't care at all. And I would say that far but outweighs.
I've seen Big Bang Theory, so wrong.
I mean, I will say this. Every single person at SETI was a fan of Star Trek, because they made that joke to open up the conference. So I will say that. And then it derailed the opening keynote into discussions on captains. So also, one of the linguists there was actually the person who made Dothraki. So I think it depends on the science.
That's fair. But no, I like I said, you can get there, and for, like I said, for every person you do, there's plenty of them that don't.
Yeah, don't generalize.
And I just, overall, for as much media as we produce and as much like tough to produce, why are we not having actually producing all these people if it's that important to me? Yeah. The overall numbers are low. Because, like I said, we are producing tons of media and tons of stuff like this and these inspirational things, but the actual numbers of people being in STEM and thing are declining. So if it's media is that big of a porn, like...
Well, to be fair, though, like, a lot of the influx of that type of media, like, that generation has not entered the workforce. Like, we don't know the actual impact on a lot of this, like, media blitzes that have been happening, because those, like, the affected youth are not entering the workforce.
So, what I mean, even in general, though, like, you saying, like, Star Wars came out in the 70s. So,
I thought you were talking about the other stuff.
No, but I'm talking about in general. Like, you keep talking about, like, oh, the general, what are you talking about? Anybody that's born in 2000 is 18 years old.
Well, technically, Star Trek is, like, I've listened to enough Star Trek episodes of literally every astrophysicist that gets on there talking about, I do this because Star Trek. No, that's...
What are all the franchises that came after that? We don't have, like, I just, like I said, you can say all you want about Star Trek and people there. The people that actually started, grew up watching Star Trek, watch people go to the damn moon.
But they credit Star Trek.
Yeah, okay. You can say what you want then.
No, like, that's literally what they say.
No, you can say what you want, but you can't back up anything of, like, why do we not have anybody there? Like, the numbers are plummeting in actual people.
Because we don't have money there. Like, it goes back to funding. Like, a parent...
Because we don't care.
Like, the parent that sends their kids to med school is probably sending their... Or, like, to med... Like, medical camp is probably sending them there because they know that they can make money in that job. A parent who fosters a love of doing something like space or something that isn't necessarily a traditional career path, that's a parent who is okay with their kid just being happy in their field. We're an economy-driven... Okay. We're an economy-driven... people, in a capitalist driven people, you go where the money is. So, like, I think it has to go hand in hand.
That's fine, but where's all the funding going then?
The military?
Well, we knew that.
If we're honest, it's the military.
We know that.
Because we're talking about, like, federal budgets getting spent. No, I mean, federal budgets are cutting media programs. Federal budgets are constantly cutting media programs. So, like, if we're looking at federal budgets, it's not going to any media at all. Privatized budgets, yes. But federal budgets, they're not cutting NASA to go fund Captain Marvel and stuff. Like, they're
no, but we
yeah, they're not going to cut funds to go hate half their audience. Why would they do that?
Like, NPR has lost so much money, and so have the other public access, like, actual journalistic integrity people, because a lot of it has been cut, like, from the actual media budget, and a lot of it's getting put into more militarization. That's the actual answer.
Okay.
Now, we just need all the really, really rich dudes to team up and all go in on SpaceX, and then we'll get somewhere. But they're also not putting money into movies. Other than Amazon. Amazon's putting money into movies, but...
The real question is Armageddon scientifically accurate?
No. Not.
So, you can find us at But Why the PC on all of our social media. Remember to rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes or wherever you're listening. It helps people find us, and you can find me at OhMyMythRandier on Twitter. Adrian?
Yep, you can find me on Twitter at SuperReese93, SuperReuiz93.
Matt?
I'm dead. Inside.
He can't talk in the vacuum of space.